Good morning, everyone. Today we can begin on the fourth and last canto of Book 10, the Book of the Double Twilight. It begins on page 641. This is Book 10, the Book of the Double Twilight. And in the previous three cantos, we have been in the dream twilight of the ideal. But Savitri has already said that it's not necessary to stay there for her, because she says, of its citizens, I am not one. I cherish God the fire, not God the dream. So now they are moving on. Savitri is behind, death walked in front of her, and Satyavan is in front of death. He looks, Sri Aurobindo says, like a failing star. Above was the unseen balance of his fate. Satyavan's fate has not yet been decided. So I think we'll start at the back today. Chitra, will you begin?
Canto 4, the dream twilight of the earthly realm. Their train afloat, the slowly downward sand. It slipped towards a stumbling, frail descent. The dim heart marvel of the ideal was lost. Its crowding wonder of bright, delicate dreams and vague, half-limbed sublimity she had left. Short colors, lower levels, hard and tense, its passion for some crude reality. The twilight floated still but changed its hues, and heavily swayed a less delightful dream. It settled in tired masses on the air, its symbol colors tuned with duller reds and almost seeing a lurid mist of day.
Thank you. Oh, we have to read the whole canto. Thank you for reminding me. Okay, Chitra, you can go a little further, please. So, David.
Of nature and the arts of man,
creating humans, them revelation and delivering words, emptied of their mission and their strength to save. The messages of the evangelist gods, voices of prophets, scripts of vanishing creeds.
Thank you. Mr. Morty.
Each in its hour, determined claim went by. Aliens, systems, sciences, poems, crafts, tireless declaration, and again recurred, sought restlessly by some creative power. But all were dreams crossing an empty vast. Ascetic voices called up lonely scenes, seers, on mountain summits or on river banks, or from the desolate heart of forest lakes, seeking heaven's rest or the spirit's wordless peace, or in bodies motionless, like statues fixed, entranced cessations of their sad sleeping souls and distributivity. All things the past has made and slain were there. Its lost forgotten forms that once had lived, and all the present loves as new revealed, and all the hopes the future brings have failed. Already caught and spent in efforts vain, repeated fruitlessly age after age, unwearied all return insisting still, because of joy in the anguish of pursuit, and joy to create and keep, and joy to kill. The rolling cycles passed and came again, brought the same triumphs and the same barren end. Forms ever new and ever old, the long appalling illusions of the world.
You have the place, Jan? You have it? Page 643 at the break. You've got it?
I'm surprised that he got it.
He got it from Margaret, I suppose. Yes. Will you read?
Once more arose the great destroying voice across the fruitless labor of the world. His huge denials or defeating might pursue the ignorant march of dolorous time. Behold the figures of the symbol wheel, its soulless outlines of creative dream, inspiring the great concrete task of earth. In its motion, the rattle of human life here, though, can't trace the outcome nature did to the sin of being and the error in sins and the desire that compels to life.
To live.
To live. And man's incurable malady of hope. In an immutable order hierarchy where nature changes not, man cannot change. Ever he obeys her fixed mutation's law in a new version of her old told tale. In ever-beating cycles turn the race. His mind is spent in settling boundaries, for mind is man beyond thought he cannot soar. If he could leave his limits, he would be saved, but cannot mount to his greater heavens. Even winged, he sinks back to his native soil. He is a captive in his net of mind and beats soul wings against the wall of life.
Thank you. Praveen.
In vain his heart lifts up its yearning prayer, peopling the brilliant gods, the form void. Then disappointed to the void, he turns, and in its happy nothingness asks release, the calm nirvana of the stream of self. The word in silence ends, in naught the name. Apart, amid the mortal multitudes, he calls the Godhead incommunicable, to be the lover of his lonely soul, or casts his spirit into its void embrace. What he finds his copy in the impartial all, imparts to the immobile his own will, attributes to the eternal wrath and love, and to the ineffable lends a thousand names. Hope not to call God down into his light. How shalt thou bring the everlasting here? There is no house for him in hurrying time. Vainly thou seekest in matter's world an aim. No aim is there, only a will to be. All walk by nature, bound forever the same. Look on these forms that stay a while and pass. These lives that long and strive, then are no more. These structures that have no abiding truth. The savior creeds that cannot save themselves, but perish in the strangling hands of the years. Discarded from man's thought, proved false by time. Philosophies that strip all problems bare, but nothing ever have solved since earth began. And sciences omnipotent in vain, by which men learn of what the suns are made, transform all forms to serve their outward needs, ride through the sky and sail beneath the sea, but learn not what they are, why they came.
We'll pause there. Claude, would you read on, please?
This is what it is of the textures of this man's brain that, gripped with heavy languor, wore in man's spirit, and his shared houses, palace, at once from jail, watched while the rain and crumbled before the crash. These revolutions, demons and drunken, convulsing the wounded wounded body of mankind, only to paint new and old face. These wars, carnage triumphant, ruin gone mad, the work of centuries vanishing in an hour, the blood of the vanquished and the victor's form, which man to be born must pay for with that pain, the hero's face divine on satire's lint, the demon's wonder mixed with a demi-god, the glory and the peaceful and the shame. Why is gold the labor and the din, the transient joys, the timeless sea of tears, the longing and the hoping and the pride, the battle and the victory and the fall, the painless journey that can never close, the waking toil, the incurrent sleep, song, shouts and weeping, wisdom and idle words, the laughter of man, the irony of the gods.
Thank you. Can you? No? Tom.
Thank you.
Thank you. Larry?
Mind is a tissue woven of light and shade, where right and wrong have sown their mingled parts. For mind is nature's marriage of covenants between truth and falsehood, between joy and pain. This struggling pair no court can separate. Each thought is a gold coin with brilliant alloy, and error and truth are its obverse and reverse. This is the imperial mintage of the brain, and of this kind is all its currency. Think not to plant on earth the living truth, or make of matter's world the home of God. Truth comes not there, but only the thought of truth. God is not there, but only the name of God. If self there is, it is bodiless and unborn. It is no one, and it is possessed by none. On what shalt thou then build thy happy world?
Thank you. Ganga Lakshmi.
Cast off the light and mind, the love heart save, and all sin omnipresent stuff alone. If God there is a God, not for the world. All sin is sins which are indifferent gains. He has doomed all heart to sorrow and desire. He has bound all life with his unplacable yoke. He hears not the ignorant voice of prayer. Eternal wise rage calling him, unknown, untouched by all that he has known. He sees as minute the parrots need to stars, the animal suddenly, and the fate of man. Immeasurably wise, he exceeds the thought. He is a solitary joy, needs not the world. His truth is human, thinking cannot play. Without desires, then still the mind forever, slave by the doom unseen life.
Thank you. What do you read, sir?
The mind is rich, lays nothing between the air. How can the mighty mother calm delight, keep fragrance in the narrow fragile ways, or lodge the sheep and the open ecstasy? The heart, which earthly soul cannot see, and body cannot death, can stay at will. Bring not to change the world that God has planned. Strive not to alter His eternal law. The parents, they are for the case that trust to teach. They seek the joy so could not find on earth. Or in the imperishable hemisphere, where life is moving, and the light is king, and spirit is the deathless ground of things. Choose by high station, child of affinity, the thaw art spirit, and nature is high law, cast off high God, and be high naked self. The musical is undying truth, alone forever, alone. Turn then to God, that He will leave all behind, forgetting love, forgetting such a one. Anand thyself in His immobile peace, also drowned in his still beauty. For Thomas died to Michael, to reach God's height. I, death, am the gate of immortality.
Thank you.
But Saviour answers to your service done. Once more leap the for light to blind trust eyes, make knowledge and catch off the snare of ignorance, and the word about to slay my living soul, offer, O King, thy bones to try spirits, and the hearts that could not hear the wounds of time. Let those who were tied to body and to mind tear off those bones and flee into white calm, crying for refuge from the play of God. Surely thy bones are great since thou art free. But how shall I seek rest in endless peace? Who are the mighty mother's violent soul? Her vision turned to read the aiming rule, her veil tempered in the blaze of Jesus' sun, and the flaming silence of her heart of love, the word is a spiritual paradox, invented by me in the unseen, a poor translation to the creature's sense of that which forever exceeds idea and speech, a symbol of what can never be symbolized, a language mispronounced, misspelled, yet true. Its powers have come from the eternal hate, and plunged into the innocent deep abyss, and risen from it to the dear marvelous world. The soul is a figure of the unmanifest. The mind labors to think the unthinkable, the life to call the immortal into birth, the body to enshrine the illimitable.
Thank you.
So what is it that found peace and joy? He went through life by the dark, undetected the dark. He went through life with the dying and lost his soul. One soul forces through the paradise. Heaven's strength forces its way through death and night. The sight is seen at hand, our being touched. Mine is a torch lit from the eternal sun. My life is worth done by immortal gifts. My mortal body is the eternal power. Only the torch becomes a dying breath. Already life is the immortal force. The house grows of the household of heart and mind. How can never life the human's mind? And this can never enter the immortal spirit. Our God has sent into the world to make.
Thank you. Amitoj.
If in the meaningless void creation rose, if from a bodiless force matter was born, if life could climb in the unconscious tree, its green delight break into emerald leaves, and its laughter of beauty blossom in the flower, if sense could wake in tissue, nerve, and cell, and thought sees the green matter of the brain, and soul from the secrecy to the flesh. How shall the nameless life not move on men, and unknown powers emerge from nature's sleep? Even now, hints of luminous truth like stars arise in the mind-moon splendor of ignorance. Even now, the deathless lover's touch we feel. If the chamber's door is even a little ajar, what then can hinder God from stealing in? Or who forbid his kiss on the sleeping soul? Already God is near, the truth is close, because the dark, appeased body knows him not. Must the sage deny the light, the seer his soul? I am not bound by thought or sense or shame. I live in the glory of the infinite. I am near to the nameless and unknowable. The ineffable is now my household name. But standing on eternity's luminous brink, I have discovered that that the world was He. I have met spirit with spirit, self with self, but I have loved too the body of my God. I have pursued Him in His earthly form. A lonely freedom cannot satisfy a heart that has grown one with every heart. I am the deputy of the aspiring world. My spirit's liberty I ask for all.
Thank you. We've got another 20 pages of this canto. Would you like to go back to the beginning and we look in more detail? Yes, at the passages. So we go back to page 641. Failing star is Satyavan. Death walked in front of her, and Satyavan in the dark front of death, a failing star. Yeah? So on page 641, we'll look again in more detail. Tara, you would read, please.
Wonder of bright, delicate dreams and vague, half-limbed subtleties she had left. Thought fell towards lower levels, hard and tense, it passioned for some crude reality. The twilight floated still, but changed its hues, and heavenly spotted a less delightful dream. It settled in tired masses in the air, its symbol colors tuned with duller reds, and almost seemed a lurid mist of day.
Thank you. So the scenery changes from that dream twilight of the ideal, which was such a beautiful, alluring, lovely place. Now the road goes slowly downwards and turns into a stumbling grey descent. There must be loose stones on the path. One can go with difficulty. And as they go downwards, that crowding wonder of bright, delicate forms, which was there in the twilight of the ideal, this they leave behind. It's vague, half-limbed sublimities, beautiful, sublime forms and colors and sounds, but they were only half-limbed. They were indistinct. They couldn't be seen clearly. He used the word vague many times, no? So that is left behind. Now she's entering another realm in which thought even, not only the thought was earlier, it was uplifted by the ideal. All kinds of wonderful things seemed possible. Now they're coming down into the earthly real, and thought fell towards lower levels. It becomes hard and tense, and what it's passioning for, what it passionately wants, is some crude reality, not some higher, beautiful, dream-outlined reality, but something that feels really real. So there's still this twilight, but its colors have changed. It becomes heavy, like a heavy mist, and it's swathing, it's covering up like a mist, a less delightful dream than that dream of the ideal. The twilight settled in tired masses on the air, and the colors, its symbol colors, tuned with duller reds. I think there weren't any reds in the dream of the ideal. Mm-hmm. It was only beautiful pastel colors, no? So this twilight seems almost like a lurid mist of day. A gray mist shot with red lights of flame or rising sun, perhaps sun rising through clouds. Alice.
A straining talk and dire besieged her heart, heavy her sensory with a dangerous load. Sadder, greater sounds were in her ears, and through stern breakings of the night and glare, her vision caught a hurried driving planes and cloudy mountains, wild streams, and cities climbed in minarets and towers towards an unwilling, changeless sky. Long quays and key vaults.
Keys and guts.
What, huh?
Keys and guts.
Keys.
Okay, we'll pause there. So the thought fell towards lower levels, and in this landscape, this atmosphere, the heart also feels some strain, a straining taut, tight, and terrible besieged her heart, and the senses grew heavy, as if they're carrying a load, he says, even a dangerous load. The sounds, they're no longer those beautiful musical sounds of an ideal nature. These are sadder, greater sounds were in her ears. And this lurid mist, he calls it also a lambent glare, a shining mistiness and a harsh light, no? It breaks. So through the breaking mist, now and again, her vision caught a hurry of driving planes, as if she's in a train, perhaps. No? Yeah. And cloudy mountains and wide, tawny streams. Sri Aurobindo always refers to the rivers of India as tawny, like lions, this yellowish color. Mm.
So from land she has gone to here.
Down to the plains, yes. Yeah. She's driving them forward by her will, yes. Yes, yes. And the next step in the journey is this realm of the earthly real, yes. Well, now they here we don't get so much the sense of her movement. It's more as if the landscape is rushing past her. Hmm. Yeah. At least it seems to be like that.
No? Yeah, it was tumbling and ground was.
Yes.
So now she's going very fast. So
now somehow it's this landscape, a very earthly landscape, of. But rushing past as if she's in a train.
Yes,
something like that. So she passes plains and mountains and rivers and cities with minarets and towers. And these minarets and towers are reaching up towards the sky, but it's an unavailing, changeless sky. That sky doesn't change, and it seems hopeless or useless, something that's unavailing? Is it something without without value? She also, for a moment, she sees these quays on the rivers where boats will tie up, and ghats, these are the steps down for bathing in the rivers, and harbors white with sails. All these things, they just challenge her sight for a short time, and then they're gone. So it's this landscape rushing past. And then there's a description of what is going on there in those landscapes. Mila.
Amidst them travail toiling multitudes, in ever shifting perishable groups, a foreign cinema of lit shadowy shapes, enveloped in the gray mantle of a dream. Imagining meanings in life's heavy drift, we trusted in the uncertain environment and waited for death to change the spirit's scene. A savage theme of labor and a tramp of our more life and the monotonous home of thoughts and acts that ever were the same, as if the dull, reiterated drone of a great brute machine beset her soul, a grey dissatisfying rumor like a ghost of the moaning of a loud and quiet sea. A huge, inhuman psychopean voice, a babbler's builder's song towering to heaven, a throb of engines and the clang of tools brought the deep undertone of labor's pain.
Thank you. So in these scenes that she is seeing, there are multitudes of people, lots of them, but they are toiling multitudes. They are travailing, they have to work hard. She sees them in groups, but they are all, the groups are always changing, some ever-shifting, perishable groups. And what they look like, he says, is a foiled cinema of lit, shadowy shapes enveloped in the gray mantle of a dream, as if it's like the old black and white cinema. These images. You see the film projected on a foil. I don't know what Rand Hicks says about it, but that's what it suggests to me. It's funny, he has referred to it a couple of times.
It's not here.
Not there, okay.
The foil means to prevent.
To prevent something, but I don't think that's what it means here. On a foil.
I mean, it's a strange word because foil is generally bright and shiny.
These are shadowy shapes and they are lit up, you know, artificial lighting perhaps. Yeah. And so they look as if these figures, these shifting groups, and you know how it is in the early cinema, the funny way that people move. Yeah? So. And they're all enveloped in this grey mantle of a dream. But Savitri can sense what these people are feeling. She has this direct perception of what they are feeling. So he says that those people, those multitudes, they were imagining meanings in this heavy drift of the life they have to live. And they trust in this uncertain environment, they rely on it, even though it's ever-changing and unreliable, no? And yet they feel the only thing that can change for them is death. Death will change their spirit's scene. And then he describes it in more detail, and it becomes for me more and more like the industrial landscape that I grew up in, in Manchester, where Sri Aurobindo also grew up. No, he was there from the time he was seven for, I don't know, 6 or 7 years until he went to school in London. And when I was there in the city on the edges of Manchester, Oldham, which is now full of Indians, it was like this. It isn't like this anymore, because in the 1960s, the Parliament passed a Clean Air Act, and everything changed. Most of the factories and mills shut down. It's a very, very different place today. But this is how I remember the industrial landscape of northern England. So a savage din of labor and a tramp of armored life in the early morning, all the workers going to work, you know, the siren would sound, and then suddenly you'd feel the streets fill with the footsteps, no? And the monotonous hum of thoughts and acts that ever were the same every day. And it all together, it makes the drone, the sound of a great machine going on, a dull, reiterated drone of a great brute machine. All this somehow is oppressing Savitri's soul, beset her soul. It's that sound is like a grey, dissatisfied rumour, that's a sound, you know, like a ghost of the moaning of a loud, unquiet sea, a restless, stormy sea. And then the voice, that sound is also like a voice, a huge, inhuman, cyclopean voice. The cyclops are giants in Greek mythology, one-eyed giants, very, very strong, and with very strong voices also. Or like the song sung by those who are building the Tower of Babel, a Babel builder's song, towering to heaven. No.
England says Babel and America says Babel.
Babel is different. Babel is, babbling is what babies do, or streams. That's the town of Babel. Sorry. Anyway, I don't know how Sri Aurobindo pronounced it.
It's a capital B, it's a city of Babel. It's a capital B.
Yes.
Do you know if Sri Aurobindo had a chance to see some films? Because there are many references to cinema here.
There are two or three references in the poem,
yes.
And perhaps he had,
yeah.
No? During that time when he was in Kolkata and Baroda in the in Kolkata, he moved to Kolkata in 1906.
Mm-hmm.
It's possible that he saw a couple of films. Also, yes. I don't think he saw television, but he knew about the invention of television. But of course, he must have also seen many, many, many things and experiences with his subtle sight.
Yeah.
So we don't know whether he had to physically see or not.
The only meaning of foil that I ever knew was something that's been interrupted or spoiled. So.
Prevented.
Yeah, but this thing, it seems to me like if you're trying to see a cinema and there was a curtain hanging in front of it, in other words, it's enveloped in the gray mantle of a dream, as if it was a gray curtain.
If there's something in between, yes.
I never heard of foil as an adjective.
Go to Shining Market and buy a human foil. You'll find rolls and rolls of aluminum foil which we use in the kitchen.
Aluminum foil I know, but I never heard of it.
So you do know that Sri Aurobindo often uses nouns and turns them into adjectives. It's a very familiar thing.
In the early cinema, it was like, compared to our modern cinema, early cinema was like foil. I mean, it was black and white, and it was hardly visible.
That's what he's describing, is that gray scene.
The screens themselves were not what we have now for screens. Mm. They had that foil, like silver light, sheen.
They called it the silver screen, didn't they?
It was more cloth,
oh, yeah, right.
Mm. Silver screen.
No, not the screens. No. In the theaters, they were made with that old sparkle or some film.
Thank you. So anyway, this is this terrible noise, a throb of engines and the clang of tools. So this also communicates this deep undertone of labor's pain, the suffering of all those people who have to live and work hard in that environment. And then the description continues. You would read here.
As when pale lightnings tear a tortured sky, high overhead a cloud-rimmed series flared, chasing like smoke from a red funnel driven, the forced creations of an ignorant mind. Drifting, she saw like pictured fragments flee, phantoms of a human thought and baffled hopes. The shapes of nature and the arts of man, philosophies and disciplines and laws, and the dead spirit of old societies, constructions of the Titan and the world.
Thank you. So she also sees, high overhead, chasing like smoke, the forced creations of an ignorant mind. These are constructions of the ignorant mind, and it's as he gives two comparisons, pale lightnings tearing through a tortured sky, a very stormy, cloudy, troubled sky lit up by flashes of pale lightning. Or, he says, it's like smoke driven from a red funnel, which is also an image I'm carrying from my childhood. The town was full of these chimneys. A few of them were not made of brick, but made of metal. And I remember seeing one that regularly, it didn't only produce black clouds of smoke, but also flames would shoot out of it. So. Something like that's a picture like that, no. But a funnel, of course, is on a normally on a ship, where the smoke or steam comes up. Yes. So this is, these thoughts, these forced creations of an ignorant mind, are flaring, lighting up, rimmed by clouds, chasing. They're also moving fast, like smoke from a red funnel driven. These are the forced creations of an ignorant mind. And then there's a list of these forced creations. They pass drifting high above like pictured fragments. Phantoms, ghosts, ghostly shapes of human thought, and the baffled hopes, shapes of nature, and the arts of man. These pass like clouds, philosophies, disciplines, laws, the dead spirits of old societies. These are all constructions, constructions of the Titan, of superhuman beings, and of the worm in man who is a worm. Stefania.
As if lost remnants of forgotten life, before her mind there fled, with trailing wings, revelation and delivering words, emptied of their mission and their strength to say. The messages of the evangelist calls, voices of prophets, scripts of vanishing creeds. Each in its hour eternal claim went by. Ideas, systems, sciences, poems, crafts, tireless there perished and again repelled, sought restlessly by some creative power. But all were dreams crossing in empty vast.
Thank you. These are all the forced creations of an ignorant mind. All the human achievements. Each in its hour has been claimed to be eternal, but now they have been emptied of their mission and their strength to save. But they perish, but then they come back again in another form. Some creative power is calling these formations back again and again. But all of them were dreams crossing this empty vast of the ignorant mind.
Ascetic voices call up lonely seers, and mountain summits are by river banks, are from the desolate heart of forest hills, seeking heaven's rest, are the spirit's wordless peace, are embodies motionless like statues. Entranced citizens of their sleepless heart, set sleeping souls, and this too for their dream.
Thank you. This is the other side.
Spiritual.
The spiritual side. Mother has commented on this sentence in the agenda. She was very struck by this line, and this too was a dream. All the human achievements, including the ascetic voices of those who were seeking heaven's rest or the spirit's worldless peace. They have done these great tapastya. They've been able to stop the flow of thought in trance. Their souls as if at sleep. This too was a dream. At least death is showing all this to Savitri as a dream.
All so. These things you say like sleeping souls. All the people who are meditating and doing various things, the spirit are also like sleeping souls.
How they can be awake, you know, with this life.
Aram. Thus. Marie.
All things, because as many and slain were there, is lost the golden forms that once have lived, and all the present worlds and every year, and all the hosts future games have filled. Already, fraud and spent and at the stake, repeated fruitlessly, age after age. Unburied, all returning, existing still, because of joy in the anchorage of pursuit, and joy to labor and to win and lose, and joy to create and keep joy to kill. The rolling cycles buzzed and came again, brought the same toils and the same barren end. Forms ever new and ever old, the long abiding revelations of the world.
Thank you. So this is what death is showing to Savitri, this symbol world, this representation of an earthly reality full of unending toil and effort. All things the past has made and destroyed, they're all still there because they get repeated. Everything gets repeated. All the hopes the future brings, he shows her they've already failed. They've been caught, spent in efforts vain. And they get repeated fruitlessly, age after age. Why does it keep coming back and back and back, because something is delighting in them. Because of joy, different kinds of joy that brings all this stuff back again and again. Joy in the anguish, the pain of pursuit, and the joy of the labor and the winning, and even the losing brings a certain kind of joy. And the joy of creation and keeping, and the joy of killing and destroying. All this keeps these rolling cycles passing and coming again and again. The same toils, the same barren end. It's like fruitless, no? Forms ever new and ever old. The long, appalling revolutions of the world. Revolutions in the sense of the revolutions of a wheel or an engine, but also the sense of change, which just brings the same thing back again. Sri Aurobindo says that, yes, but this is what death is showing to Savitri. And she's not going to be deceived by it, so we should not either. But at the same time, we can say, what a marvelous description of a certain aspect of earthly reality.
Well, it's interesting that when the world does continue to repeat, and we have a continuous reality that we can connect to through our own life experience, instead of being thrown into a vast of like, you know, atoms that are so far apart, and the construction of a chair that is because of certain atoms, we've agreed that they are there and that this chair is a chair. But in fact, that structure has served us for a certain reason.
Yes.
But how do you get past that? And it's an incredibly powerful prison of reality, created reality with small r.
Which we are living in and which we find it difficult to get out of, yes.
And so thinking that death is the gateway, death is a way to emerge from that prison.
We think so.
Yeah.
Actually, we just do another revolution.
Well, yeah. Mm-hmm. But there must be some point at which there's an access. And death has also become a way for sometimes people to get away and not be so trapped. And many people, as they approach the end of their life, really do start disengaging a bit and seeing things from a
more detached perspective.
More detached, maybe a little more enlightened.
Yes, possibly. Yeah. Yes. Yes.
This morning I read some entretien of the modern mother said spiritual revolution, change in the new cycle. Spiritual revolution.
Yes. So death is not thinking at all about the spiritual evolution.
No.
It's thinking about the persisting apparent earthly reality. But later on in this canto, Savitri will beautifully reveal to him the stages of spiritual evolution.
The mind is really, for our age right now, this terrorism thing going on. These 8 lines are with the dictators and all the terrorists that eventually need to realize. Because it exposes this cult of death. There's creation, but then there's a joy to kill also.
Yes.
So as long as man is so ignorant that he can't see that, but he says the barren end, the same barren end. Those 3 words really go to the heart of the matter, no?
For me, it was also the rolling cycles fast and came again, that I always was touched by this in book 3, the book of the Divine Mother, that alone her hands can change times, dragon days, and their slow round the cycles turn to her call.
Yes.
That this would be the spirituality of the
election. Yes.
Well, is it detailed? Could
did not be said that our human condition constantly keeps weaving webs of reality which we think is really real. The reality, this reality is real. And we keep weaving those webs and how to unweave them to go beyond that reality. And so we can say it's practical, it is realistic, it is pragmatic. So we make many words to make that reality tangible.
Yes.
And so to go beyond it, is really in some ways is a real journey.
Yes, if these are the creations of an ignorant mind, Sri Aurobindo has given us this book and all his other books to give us a different perspective so that we don't have to, at least as individuals, we can at least try and offer our consciousness to be used in a different way, not to just go on repeating these cycles. That is surely the mission that he felt he had to fulfill, to illumine the mind of modern man, open it up to new and higher truths and possibilities. And the lines of this poem, Mother has characterized them. She said, Savitri is a mantra for the transformation of the world. The more these amazing lines and the truths that they are carrying, the illumination and the power that they are carrying resonate in human minds, the more change we can hope for.
Mutation of Death, written by Sri Aurobindo, and I made a mental note because immediately thought of this. Did you read that? Have you read that book?
No, it must be an essay which is published separately now as a booklet.
Isn't that a book by Saprem?
Perhaps it's by Saprem, yeah.
No, I thought he said that Sri Aurobindo wrote it, but I could be mistaken. But I'm very interested in that.
Like, yes, please have a look at it and tell me. Yes, Don.
I'm 83 years old, born 1933, and I have yet to see any one time of peace.
Yes.
Just go through history and so on. And it will bloody.
And it gets seems to get worse,
and
doesn't
it? Seems to get worse and worse. And there's always a reason for it. This is the way. We don't want the way. Bang, bang, bang. And now that I've seen that, now I go back and look at that. I don't want that.
Well, at least you are blessed to be in Oroville. I think we're all extremely privileged to breathe a slightly purer air here. The things are far from perfect in Oroville because of all our human failings and limitations. But I do think by the grace of Mother and Sri Aurobindo, they've projected something here which gives us a unique possibility to progress.
Because here in Oroville there's a something which is not a barren end. That's interesting, isn't it? I was listening to the TV the other day when they were after one of those spate of disasters in Europe, and they had, you know, it began with Je suis Charlie, Je suis Paris, Je suis Brussels, and finally the latest one is in French, and I'm to say, I am tired, you know, just like he said, we're tired of it. But how many, if we introspect for a moment, all of us from different countries in this room, have we had these thoughts? Is it what Sherman has put in these eight lines is absolutely amazing. How many people are thinking more, and they're about ready, I think, you know, to think in this way, that enough is enough of this. Let's get to the good thing. And it's here. We just have to want it.
Even other than Oroville, I think there's a lot of enlightenment going on.
Yeah.
Oroville is separate, even other,
yeah.
At least the world I come from, and there are also a lot of awareness, all these things are going on. Of course, they don't have enough willpower to come here,
But awareness and clearly thinking is there. Of course, there are extreme elements which are, of course, much more visible.
I think the whole of humanity has not yet found the solution. We do not yet know how to deal with what I can bluntly call evil. We have no idea. We can't face that. We don't know how to do it. So we have to evolve quite a bit in our consciousness to be able to convert or even to bring a little light. There's a line in book 7 where it speaks of the messengers that are coming from the soul. And there they say, in evil we light the fire of good, no? But
in evil
we light the flame, I think he says, of good. You know, so that flame of conversion, it is some a soul power that maybe is there, but we are not yet in full possession of that that power of conversion, of changing things. So all this illumination that Sri Aurobindo and the Mother offer to us, we have to absorb as much of it as we can. Shall we stop there for today?
Once more arose the great destroying voice. Behold the figures of this symbol ring. Its solid outlines of creative dream, inspiring the great concrete tasks of earth. Where nature changes not, man cannot change. Hope not to call God down into his lake. How shalt thou bring the everlasting here? There is no house for him in hurrying time. But Savitri answered to the sophist God, if the chamber's door is even a little ajar, what then can hinder God from stealing in? Or who forbid his kiss on the sleeping soul? Already God is near, the truth is close. A lonely freedom cannot satisfy a heart that has grown one with every heart. I am a deputy of the aspiring world. My spirit's liberty I ask for all.
Thanks to Sri Aurobindo.